Turn to Luke, if you will. While you're turning to Luke 7, I'm going to be doing a series on the greatest stories ever told. And I started with Luke. Luke tells some parables that Jesus never told in Matthew or Mark. And so I picked Luke. There's many more that this would take us up through May. We'd have a missions conference coming up and other things like that, but just wanted to let you know. I want to say that you ought to really consider coming to a membership class. Not that we need more members. You need to know why you're going here. We might be a cult. You might find out what we teach. See if we're Bible. And if we're not Bible, find another church that teaches the Bible, huh? Don't go to any church where they don't teach the Bible. Huh? Eh? People don't know anymore. Well, he's cute. He's charismatic. He's got gifts. Oh, does he love the Savior? Can he preach the Bible so it doesn't embalm the saints? Because God knows the saints don't need to get any sleepier. They need to wake up. You haven't been given gift. If you can't teach the word without putting people to sleep, you don't have the gift. God's people need to wake up. They don't need to be put to sleep. So you ought to come to that class, and we have a great time. We deal with knowing Christ on Friday night, because you cannot believe the answers we get when we ask people, how can you get to heaven? They're all over the board. If you don't know how to answer that, you need to know. And then just this Timothy Fellowship, I'm starting the class November 9th. It'll run about 9 weeks. And it's going to be on how to minister to people. And let me tell you who shouldn't take it. Those too lazy to study. Don't waste your time. Watch another dumb TV program. Stay at home. God's never got his work done through people too lazy to learn. He just won't. If you don't cherish the treasure, sometimes I don't know if people are swine or sheep. Because Jesus said swine don't value truths enough not to trample on them. But he said don't cast treasures before swine. Guess what we do? We make people work a little bit to show up. And it says they treasure what they're learning. They treasure it. You know, I went to Bible college and seminary. My overwhelming sense of ignorance about what I wanted to know. There is something in God so rich and fulfilling. I've never learned anything about him that didn't reward me 100 times over for the effort. How about you? You know, he said in Proverbs 2 that wisdom never lies on the top of the ground, but it's like silver that you got to get under the ground. That means you've got to mine it. It's there, but if you're too lazy to pick up a pick and shovel, you never could have the gold or the silver. And so I'm looking in my own heart for people hungry to know Christ enough to study his word. And I don't know how many moments are left in the hourglass for me, but I determined about 10 years ago I would not waste my life just preaching to people who are bored. I would invest my life in men and women who love God enough to want to know his word. That's my passion in life. So I invite you to do it. You can sign up. Donna is going to be taking, since Judy and all of them, Judy Chan is my point person for Timothy Wow. Need to sign up because we need to order books, and I want to screen the name to see if there's any suspicious characters. And if I don't think you really are worthy enough to be there, I'll let you know. It's easier to get to heaven than in this Timothy class. So, and heaven's totally free. Timothy's not. And so I want you in there. If I were you, I'd be so totally discouraged by now, I wouldn't want to take it anyway. Let him keep his old class. But I'm hoping to discourage the faint-hearted and encourage those that are hungry and a little bored that they don't know the Bible better. And this class is going to focus on helping people, basically how to counsel people, how to deal with issues like worry, fear, sexuality, all the hang-ups that people deal with, that don't need to make a pastoral visit if they had a saint in the body that just knew how to help them. And I'd like to help you get there. You might be praying for the Bangladesh parties. They're now in Bangkok, and they have to hold over for 3 days to get a flight out. And so on Wednesday, they should be flying home for, I believe, about a 16 to 18-hour flight through about three time zones. So they'll look like burnout light bulbs in the billboard of life when they get home. So don't look for anything profound for weeks. Well, let's read the text. Luke 7, verse 36. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." Now, it's interesting that Jesus answers him. He hasn't asked any question. But because he is God and a prophet, he could read his mind without Simon even knowing it. And so he just says, "Let me tell you something, Simon. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii. A denarii was 18 cents. One denarii a day paid a Roman soldier and paid a farmer. So it's the average poor man's wage. So 500 days worth of wages. Whatever you make an hour, just take it out, 500 days. But another just owed him 50 days worth of income. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Which of them will love him more? Simon replied, and it's believed to believe reluctant. He knows he's being set up. He's just fishy. So some scholars think it's a reluctant. He doesn't want to answer if he can get out of it. But come on, he's a Pharisee. He's got to know everything about the law and God. And he says, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled." "Ah, you have judged correctly. You get an A, Mr. Pharisee," whose very name and vocation meant the separate ones, the holy ones. Then he turned toward the woman. We never get her name. It's going to be wonderful to see how many people in the Bible weren't important enough to have their name given to meet them in heaven. It might be left that way because it might be your name. Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests begin to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." What's very interesting about the narrative is back in chapter 20 or verse 7, 24, the debate breaks open about John the Baptist and his kind of ministry. If you grew up in strict circles in Christianity, John the Baptist is your kind of guy. He's your kind of pastor. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, and he's never seen with anyone who does. That's just the kind of a holy man you want, right? Yeah, well, that's what most folks want that I grew up with. Are you holy? Are you separate? We ain't supporting a pastor that, might play a friendly game of cards. No money involved. You can own cards. When I grew up, it was against, we were against that. We were for the John the Baptist. Wear a camel-haired outfit, eat weird, look a little weird, and you were holy. And we want you for pastor, even if we do run to Reno. And then here comes Jesus, the prophet of all prophets, the man of all men. The God-man has shown up. And guess what his style was? Verse 34, the Son of Man came eating and drinking. Now, do you think he meant water? No, everybody drank. No, he's drinking the real stuff. You know, first miracle turned water to wine, and we're still trying to figure out what wine means. Because if you're the John the Baptist crowd, it can't be fermented. So, no, my Savior wouldn't make anything that looked like Gallo. Okay. You can make wine mean what you want, but God knew what he meant when he gave the word. And then what did they say? And you say about Jesus, he is a glutton. The boy's always going to parties. And a drunkard. And he's never drunk in his life. But just because he drank wine. A friend of tax collectors. How dare him? He's a friend with known crooks. People that we know scam on the tax bill and make maybe 15% under the table. He's gone over to Matthew's house. He said, Zacchaeus, he looked the boy up. He went to his house. He had dinner with him. I don't want him for my pastor. He can't even be my Messiah. I don't like his style. And he actually runs with sinners. Then he says, wisdom is proved right by his children. Then he goes into the story. I mean, it just happens in the narrative that a Pharisee who was upset with his style and suspicious of him, and he doubts that he is a prophet, but he has Jesus come over, and many debate, why did he have him come over? Well, let's get this clear. He didn't come over because he thought he was a prophet. He's totally in doubt. He doesn't think he's Messiah. I doubt that he's having Jesus over for celebrity status. He has him as a cynic. He wants, who is this man? I want to have a discussion with him. They brought him over, and to show you how cynical he was, three things ordinarily happen when you had a rabbi at your house, and he was considered a rabbi. Just normally, just anybody to your house, you'd wash their feet. That was just Oriental custom. You wore open-ended shoes, sand, dirt, wash the feet. If you didn't do it, you had a household servant do it. You would always greet them with the kiss of friendship or of welcome. And you see this still going on in the ancient Near East, not on the lips, but on the side of the face, welcome. And then you would usually have some kind of inexpensive, just depends on how you value the person, inexpensive perfume cologne. And that would be giving special honor. We're glad you're here. And see, we all grow up with deodorants, perfumes. This culture didn't have those things. That was special to have a pleasant fragrance. Well, all that's omitted. None of that's going on. But when you have these occasions, something's interesting. They would eat as they did in the upper room. Da Vinci's Last Supper is a fabrication. They didn't have the Last Supper that way. They all leaned on the left arm. And they ate with the right hand. So they're all leaning around the table here. And what custom permitted is the neighbors were allowed to come in without invitation. And what they would do is stand around the walls of the room, uninvited, but they would stand there. And they would set in on the discussions of the rabbis. Maybe learn something. And hopefully this would be a sumptuous meal. And if they were poor neighbors, they always hoped that hospitality would afford them a scrap or two at least of the meal. So that was common. So all of a sudden, Mr. Simon's there, and without invitation, without notice, someone's against the wall, and not just against the wall, but the guest of honor's feet are being soaked with their continual tears and their strong words in the Greek, their present tenses. She was just weeping. Someone has said that tears come from the well of the heart. Well, this woman was weeping and weeping, so much so that when she did this, she broke custom. First of all, she shouldn't have been at a Pharisee's house, unwelcome. Two, she lets down her hair. A woman was never allowed to do that except for her husband. In public, your hair was to be kept up. So she moved beyond the boundaries. She takes her hair, which was her glory, according to 1 Corinthians. A woman's hair is her glory. She turns her glory into a towel. And all of a sudden, we've got this man's feet being caressed, dripping wet from a woman, weeping. Not just, the picture is not a drop. It's like a fountain's coming out of her. She lets down her hair, and she's drying his feet. She takes this expensive oil, not just the cheap brand, and she begins to massage his feet with this oil. And then of all things, she's down there kissing his feet. You've got to know this is a bad scene. A rabbi was never allowed to see a woman in public, never to meet with her, and they were never to touch. She's already broken that. A woman's never to let down her hair. She did it. What in the world are you doing? And Simon is judging two people. He's judging the woman. He knows she's a sinner. It never says she's a prostitute, but that's probably the common path they go. She's so bad at whatever her sin was, she's known as the sinner. She had specialized in some kind of sin, most likely immorality. And Simon knows the woman's been bad. She's got a city reputation. They all knew that. But now the one on trial is Jesus. He's now judging him, said, oh, here I am supposedly having a man of God in my house. I am supposedly having a prophet in my house. And he doesn't even know who's doing this. Doesn't he know he has a fallen woman, an immoral woman, who's breaking all propriety, touching him, wiping his feet, pouring oil, kissing him? Who are you? Do you not know who is in here? You're no prophet. You can't be a man of God. Just the way you're opening up to this woman, this is too sensual. Something is wrong. Well, what was wrong with Simon? And Jesus, being the prophet, he said, you know what? I'm going to do something for you, Simon. I want to ask you, just answer this question. It's not really brilliant. And the rabbis did this all the time, back and forth, hard sayings. Just tell me this. A money lender comes to two men. He's going to foreclose on their houses because one owes him 50 days worth of wages and the other owes 500 days worth of wages. And guess what the money lender does? What? He forgives both men, paid in full, not going to take your house, paid, bankruptcy clear. I just want to clear you of it, both of you. You're cleared. Yeah? Who do you think would be the most affectionate towards the moneylender? He puts it together. Well, I suppose the one forgiven the most. Jesus said, good. You got it. You got it. Then, without even going any further, and he just says, you know what? The only one in this room that acts grateful is this woman. The only one showing gratitude and devotion to me is this woman. And you know why she's acting this way? She has been forgiven, first of all. Two, she obviously feels she's been forgiven much. And the way she demonstrates she's been forgiven much is she's going to love much. And you, Simon, have done nothing towards me because you haven't been forgiven. And you haven't been forgiven because you don't think you need forgiveness. You think your religion has answered every question. You're a self-righteous man that has never come before God and said, I am a sinner. I have a debt I cannot pay. I need grace that I cannot earn. You're in the religion business, but you have never been forgiven by God, showing that you can go to hell full of religion. Matter of fact, you might be the pastor of the church. It's easy to be a pastor of a church in America. When the Bible is not believed and Jesus has not taught us the way, there's many a man going to hell straight from the pulpit because he doesn't ever believe anything to get him to heaven. He's just in the religion business. There's thousands of them. And there's thousands on our pews that have never got into this gratitude business and get carried away with Jesus. They've never had that. You know why? They've never been forgiven. You can't love him until you let him forgive you. You have to let him forgive you. See, the two men here, we can get caught up with one will love greater because he's been forgiven more. But remember, both were in debt. Both were bankrupt. And I think of different people. I married, let's say, I'll do it just for illustration, so it won't be picking on you. I married a woman forgiven 50 days worth wages. I felt I owed 500 days worth. Now, I was really a terrible sinner. I got saved at 14. You know how many banks and how much prison time I've done. But you know what? When we talk our lives, she was forgiven little. She was only 8 years old. Not a whole lot to forgive an eight-year-old, but she was in debt. She couldn't go to heaven on her own. And she came to Jesus. But you know what? When you're bankrupt at 50 days worth of wages, you feel as desperate as, it doesn't matter how much I owe. I just owe a debt I can't eliminate. I want out of debt. I need someone to forgive the debt. And she went to Jesus at 8 years of age. I came to Jesus at 14, and for whatever reason, I felt like the worst sinner in the place that night. I've always felt the thing that qualified me to pastor such an ornery congregation is I'm the biggest sinner. I've always felt that. Because I know what I would have done. And I know many things I would have done had God not prevented me. So I didn't do it because I was great. I was doing it because God's hand was on me. And he could get a chokehold on you where it's kind of hard to do some sins. So I would have done a lot more. So I give myself credit for what I would have done had he not called me into the bank and says, the bank of heaven says, we want to forgive you everything you owe the bank. How could that be? Well, the owner's son has said, he'd pick up all your debts, but it will cost him his life on an old rugged tree. But I have to say this. Being in church for these many years, being in the camel hair ministries and the locust teeth kind of people, you can't tell when they've eaten locusts. It looks bad. But rugged, straight arrow Christians love Jesus with all their heart. Don't mess. They're so godly. Then I've been over here with just notorious sinners, kind of what God has given us. Just it's blatant. They were known better for their sin than their holiness. I went to a conference one time, and I wound up writing back with a pastor. And this conference was for large churches. They'd made a mistake and invited me. We were about 500 then. I didn't tell them, just went to the conference, had a great time. We're writing back, and this guy pastored a large Calvary chapel in Southern California. And we were talking about church and staffing, that type thing. And I said, well, how do you staff in your church? He said, I always look for the worst sinner that's ever been out there that got saved, because I don't want any Pharisees on my staff. He said, you see, I grew up on the beaches of Southern California. I slept with everything I could sleep with. I snorted everything you could snort. I drank everything you could drink. I was hell-driven, sex-driven, used girls, abused them. And then God saved me. I wound up in a Calvary Chapel, kind of a halfway house. God saved me to the bone, forgave me of my sins, gave me some morals, gave me a reason to live. I want to reach the kind of kids that I was, and I don't need any self-righteous Pharisees. And I don't need people who don't think God can stoop that low. I said, in other words, you don't need any John the Baptist on the staff. Right. I need the Jesus model. Those that a good raw-boned sinner looks good. They're not even uptight about it. Oh, that's what I would be doing. That's the way I lived. And, oh, you know, and I'm going to say, there's a lot of sins that have been done out there that don't even appeal to me. But in your heart, there's people who just says, oh, if I didn't do it, I could have done it. And I could love you in spite of what you did. Because you're still as much in debt one way or the other as I was. Spurgeon talks about preaching in churches where people seem to be little forgiven. He started his church. He was in a church in the slums of London. But he said, when I preach around, I wind up in these churches where they were little forgiven. He said, it is a death experience. There's no enthusiasm in the singing. Everybody is lukewarm, cold, and critical. And they couldn't sing Amazing Grace with any meaning because they didn't need much grace. They were almost there anyway. You know, God just gave them a little push and they made it into heaven. He said, I preached to great sinners, large sinners. I preached to the fallen people of London in the red light district. I preached to slum dwellers. I preached to drunkards. And I see the grace of God overwhelm them and they never stop singing. They never stop praying. They never stop giving gratitude. They never stop kissing his feet and weeping that God could forgive them. Moody was holding revivals. Of course, he pastored in Chicago, and I just read his sermon on this. And he tells how a prostitute wrote him after one of his crusades, because he's always talking about the men that got saved, and they left the brothels, and they left the red light district, and they did this. And this prostitute wrote him a letter, and it's in his sermons. If you want to know the book, I could tell you. And she writes him a letter. She said, Mr. Moody, I hear a total bias in your voice against all of us who make our living in the brothel. You tell about the men who got saved and who left behind, but what about all of us lust, sin-satiated girls that never got out? You never seem to say anything about how the grace of God could save the girl that satisfied his lust in a night, who sold our body to make enough bread to feed our illegitimate children. Why do you have such a bias against us and you brag so much on the men who left us? Is there no grace for fallen women? Well, Mr. Moody took the challenge. He promoted a big conference right there in Chicago, invited women. He brought all the women that he'd sent to the brothels on the red light district, invited every fallen woman he could, and he preached about Luke 7. That it's an interesting sequence. Love does not earn forgiveness, but love is always the response of the forgiven. Those who see themselves as not as great sinners, no matter who they are, no matter how many sins they were, a small view of the sins you've done is a small view of the Christ that forgave you. You don't think much of the money lender because you didn't have much to forgive. You know what? If I owed just 50 days worth of wages and my house was on the block and you forgave me the 50 days, friend, that is great. I'd be kissing his feet with everything I had. But imagine, it doesn't matter. Put it on up as much as you want. Let me say this to you, Simon. I don't get anything from the unforgiven. I don't get anything from the self-righteous. I don't get anything from your religious group. They're wanting to stone me, and they will have a part in killing me. I came to seek and to save fallen men and women just like this woman. And the forgiveness I offer will turn her into a lover forever. A good question to ask yourself. Have I ever been at his feet in adoration for forgiving me, for changing me? Let me say some things. Forgiveness gives birth to, you never can love God until you come to God to forgive you. And you know why some of you can't sing a song? You've never been forgiven. You're still in your sins. That's why, let me tell you, the true saints of God in this building, I hear this once in a while. I would never want to cry in a service. Why? Well, we got people around that don't do anything. Well, we got people around us going to hell during the service, or searching, or in process. They haven't got there yet. Don't let the unforgiven keep you from doing your weeping and kissing his feet. The woman never did consult Simon what he was doing. Is it okay? Get out of here. And it's Simon's house. It's Simon's house. I came because this man, I met him before, and I was fallen and ruined, and nobody in this town would let me in their house. But I finally met a man that didn't want me for a night, but would keep me for eternity. I met a man that didn't want me to charge him anything. He said, I'll pick up all expenses for you to go to heaven. And I won't use you for a night. I'm going to love you forever. I want to forgive you of everything you've ever done wrong. I'm the only man in town that can forgive you. And this woman says, oh, I'm not looking who's around this table. I'm not impressed with the menu. And I'm not letting this self-righteous Pharisee determine my worship for this man, the only man that ever forgave me of all my sins. Let me tell you, once you get forgiven, you'll get your mind on worshiping and adoring him and let people sleep in church, talk in church, slap hands in church, be lukewarm, be dead. I'm not letting that crowd determine how I respond to Jesus. I've been forgiven. And I'm going to kiss his feet. I'm going to weep. I'm going to do just whatever I feel like doing. And you can get over it. Because you need to be saved. When you get saved, you don't want to kiss his feet. Huh? I don't care if you've been forgiven 50 or 500. The crowd at his feet. The crowd at his feet. The folks that are pouring out their offerings on him. Pouring out. You know, you get on. We're through the stewardship program, so ride slow. This is a little application. You get those who always whine about giving. You know why? They've never known what they've been given. They've never been forgiven. When you've been forgiven, you mean, Lord, you want an offering? Well, what can I get to it? You want my body? Because of your mercies, I'll lay everything at your feet. Hey, it becomes a romance, not a rut, not a routine, not a ritual. I'm in love at the feet of him that forgave me everything I ever did wrong. Yeah, you can clap for that. If you can't, you're probably not saved. Yeah. The church, we think just because people are in this building, they're going to heaven. No, we want you to go to heaven. But I don't come in this building. Sometimes people have told me, don't act that way. The mayor might be here. Oh, my lands. I tell you, who's here is God. I'm acting this way because God's here. I'm here to worship God, not to impress the mayor. The mayor needs Jesus. Just like the folks in this city, right? Oh, I'm feeling a little bit coming back. Telling you. Because you look at these weird people that, I know him, but you seem to be fanatical about him. You just seem, I don't have your brand. No, there's only one brand. There's only one brand. The kind where you're overwhelmed that he forgave you, and when he forgives you, the only response you can give to the money lender who canceled all the debt is you fall in love with him. Isn't that true of all of you? Now just think of when you came to Christ. Who were you sleeping with? Who were you stealing from? Who were you beat up? What did you do 3 days before you got saved? How much bad language? What were you doing when God found you? I tell you, you weren't heading towards heaven. You're on your way to hell with all the obstinates of the human heart. And then all of a sudden, you're saved, you accept Christ, and now I begin to love the things I hated. I said this as a young man, what do teenagers do that become Christians? This crowd, my folks go to church, they sing a lot, I like that. If they're anything like my sister, they pray a lot. They talk about fasting. Ooh, that's just what I want to do, fast. What? I just grabs you, I get to fast. What do you mean? I want to eat fast. I'm not talking about fasting. Revivals. You mean church every night? Man, you mean every night you hear you're going to hell? In our circles, people got saved that I read with. They told them a lot about hell. Today, we just pamper a lot. We don't want to offend them. But man, they first offended you, then hoped you got saved. You're going to hell, boy. Oh, thanks. I came to hear that. Well, I just want to let you know. I want to tell you the truth. I didn't know what it was to be pampered. But I kept on thinking, there was nothing in church for me. Nothing. Nothing. Boredom. And then one Tuesday night, I get saved. My sins are all forgiven. And all of a sudden, I can't wait to go to church. Isn't that weird? I want to go to church. Just like I took a course on how to love church. And Jim and Laura, I grew up with them. Let's see, go to church. This is how we went to church. Now, this is as the earth's crust was hardening back in 58. This is ancient history for some of you, so just take the journey. By George, I've earned it. You live long enough, you can tell ancient history. I found in this church, we went to church on Sunday morning, and then we went Sunday night, and Sunday night we started at 7, and we ended whenever we turned out the lights. Some nights, 11, some night. But our people, just they all belonged to country clubs and slept around on Monday anyway. So, my dad worked for Biggie Crane and Rigging, climbed steel all day. These were just poor folks' church. There wasn't a person in there that made hardly any money. I just wonder where we got the strength. But I don't know. We were Okies and Arkies, and, you have extra kind of body. And us black folks, we can stay in church. White folks, they get tired about an hour. But we stay all day. And then on Monday night, guess what we get to do? Twice a month. There's about 8 or 9 churches in Contra Costa. We all came together on Monday nights for what we call fellowship meetings. And sometimes it'd be the youth would be featured. Other times just another poor tired pastor would be preaching. But we get to go on Monday nights. Good. Tuesday night was Bible study night. Go. I'm 14. I'm too tired to sin. I'm in church too much. Wednesday night, as I got a little older, I'd visit a church that had a youth group in San Pablo on Wednesday night, but our youth meeting was Thursday night. And then we went into what we call 13-week revivals, 4 weeks, 2 weeks. That meant you went every night, and they took offerings at those meetings. You would always get a $10 bill broken into 10 ones, so you give in every offering. Isn't it crazy? Did you know there's thousands of people that grew up, they could not get enough God once they met him? And all last year, I keep weighing whether we keep on Sunday nights. We may not. But, I just decided if 80% want to stay home, maybe I'll stay home. I'll go to church. I'll preach somewhere. You won't determine whether I go Sunday night. I'll find some folks desperate enough to have me. I'll go preach probably at least twice a month. Because I'm just kind of addicted to it. But I don't get tired. Never. Especially with diabetes. I don't ever get tired. My problem is, if I can get lukewarm enough, I'll justify cutting everything. Because it's easy. I've never known when we've been worse off. There's more sin, more unwanted pregnancies, as much racism as there ever was in the 50s is not going away. More killings going on in Richmond, where I grew up, than ever. There'll be at least 40 to 45 killed this year. Oakland, they're killing them. All the culture is talking about is money, and we're divorcing left and right, and our kids are thrown up to the dogs. People are going to hell more than ever, and I wouldn't offer you a prayer meeting because you wouldn't come. You wouldn't come. You don't believe in it. You just can't make joint prayer meetings. That's not biblical enough for you. You're just too lazy. You just aren't forgiven enough. See, you know in the church there's different brands of people. Maybe I'm the 500 denarii. So be it. I feel that way. Gratitude comes from those who know that you are a wretch through and through, in debt to the bank of heaven, and there's not a thing you could do in 1,000 years to eliminate the debt unless God has grace and mercy on you. Now, our gospel says he does. I want to say three things about this woman, three new things she got. He said, I must close so you can rush out. Three things. She got a new freedom. She got a freedom this time to love a man without sex in the equation. She could love the man because he won't ever use her. He won't ever abuse her. He didn't want her body. He wanted to save her soul for eternity. He wasn't wanting her to put out. He was there to tell her, I'm going to die for you. They say that most prostitutes, David Rubin said, enter the trade because they hate men. And they figure we hate men enough to charge them for what we would freely give if we ever found one we loved. But in the meantime, we hate you enough to charge you. No more charging from this girl, because she found a man that picked up all her charges, paid all of her sins. A new love from working the night shift every day in a place where she could be stoned and selling her body and having to please the varied passions of men. She found the love of her life, a forgiven sinner who can from now on love at the feet of Jesus and say, thank you. Thank you for having me. A new peace. James Denny writes, apparently she was a sinner in the city, one of that unhappy class who walked the streets and lived by sin. There are none in the world more friendless, none from whom the passers-by more instinctively turn aside, none whom ordinary society would be so determined not to receive. Jesus did not shrink from the sinful woman. He received her. He took her part against the Pharisee. And as she went, she knew that friendless as she had been before she had met Jesus, of all things, God had become her friend. When you pay a prostitute, you hope she doesn't notify anybody you know. It's so shameful. And when you are the prostitute, you hope to never see your customer again. It's just business. But now this woman met someone that says, I will own you in front of this self-righteous Pharisee, this religious community leader. I will defend you. You will not have to defend yourself. I have forgiven her. You know her as she was. I know her as what she has become. And all of us have been sinners in great ways and attitudes. Maybe we haven't done the same extent. We haven't done the 500 days worth. Maybe just a 50-day sinner. No matter. No matter the size of the debt. Just to have it washed away by this God-man will put you at his feet the rest of your life, pouring out devotion and holy abandonment towards the only man that could pay up the debt of your sin. I think, I must close, I think of a preacher. He and his wife had 2 children. And he came home one day and she left him a note. She said, I'm tired of being a preacher's wife. I've just hired out at the local temple brothel and I won't be taking care of the children. I left some food on the table, but I won't be home. Sorry we couldn't make it. I've decided to join the Baal cult and the Baal cult had a wanted sign, more women to be the prostitute for Baal. And what they did, of course, at Baal, is you would go to worship Baal, but they offered sex at the front door and made it a religious experience. So they upped the ante. You know, those driven that way sure wanted to join this cult. They joined it. They'd get sex. There'd be a meal. And so the preacher lost his wife. As he went to God with his tears, God said to him something. They're auctioning your wife off. She's worn herself out in the trade. I want you to go buy her back, get her a new wardrobe, bring her home, and introduce her to the children. And let her resume being Mrs. Hosea. And Hosea chapters 1 through 3 tells about a prophet who lost his wife to whoredoms, idolatry, Baal. And he goes down there. She should have been stoned. If we had the prophets club meet, they would have already stoned her. And they had a special way. Let the first skull, the first stone hit the skull right here. It could put her out of her agony quick. And the offended husband could throw it first. Just pick it up. 5 pounds. Boom! Bash out her brains. That's what you get for being unfaithful to a man of God. You whore! God says, there'll be no such stoning, Hosea. You will go down and you will buy her. And you will wrap her. Her garments are ragged. You wrap a robe around her. Get her home and introduce her to those children again. Said, this is your mother who has sinned, who has gone away, who has been purchased, who has been brought home. And who has been forgiven. Then, he says, then I want you to go tell Israel. Israel, you have played the whore with the nations. You're sleeping with everybody but your God. But I'm going to send a redeemer to buy you back from the nations. His name will be Messiah. And he will bear the shame of all your unfaithful love and your despising your husband Jehovah. And when we show up with Jesus, he's saying, I've come to buy a world back that betrayed the arms of God, but he wants to forgive you a debt bigger than you'll ever be able to pay. And forever put you at his feet. And when you see the saints in Revelation 4 and 5, you know where they are? At his feet forever, singing, worthy, worthy is the Lamb who bought us, who forgave us. Have given us the privilege to kiss his feet for eternity. Do you find yourself at the feet of Jesus, or have you become so lukewarm like Laodicea, you've fallen in love with something cheaper than Jesus? Stuff, things, your schedule. All he wants out of his church, believe me, we've complicated it. All Jesus wants is a bunch of forgiven sinners at his feet saying thank you. I love you for loving me and forgiving me. We're all the debtor. We all owed a certain amount. He's the great money lender who picked up all the charges and paid them. That's why I love him so. Once he forgave me, I found from that Tuesday night on this strange, strange emotion. I weep. I break. I grew up with people that wept at his feet. I've never enjoyed the conservatives who've been taught emotion is weakness. You're disgusting. Any emotion, you should love him with all your heart, your mind. Conservatives like to think they're the mind church. No, many times they're the heartless church. If it doesn't move all of your being to just say, thank you, I love you for forgiveness. Abandon yourself to this man. You'll never love him too much. Love him while you have breath. Do you remember the song? I wonder if you can sing an a cappella with me. Just as I am, without one plea, but that thy blood 'twas shed for me, and that thou bidst me come to thee, O Lamb of God, I come. That there's a stanza that says, nothing in my hand to thee I bring, simply to the cross I cling, O Lamb. That whole song, what it's about is, I offer nothing towards my own debt reduction. I'm bankrupt. You've got to throw me in a poor man's prison forever. But I come just like I am, ruined, fallen, stained soil. I come. And that's the only way you told me to come, just as you are.